days in California. These kids lose their shit over just an inch or two. Dad can roll his eyes and try to blame it on the transplants, but his eyes look like everybody's do. Oh. Everybody asks me how you're doing. It's so hard to picture you existing here. We can't get the times and it's an hour to Trader Joe's, and I can barely breathe 2 months a year. The river's fine, but it's overrated. Every teacher in my school looks just like me. All the locals are so jaded, hating everyone who pays their salaries. But I'll keep on pretending this is home, because I know that's what you wanted me to do. You taught how to live alone, but I need more than memories to pull me through. I bet I can love to suffer more than you. Grandma's told me every story 3 times. There's a hard drive full of prepubescent me. When I hate my dad in school and poetry and cancer, sometimes I hate you most for leaving. But I'll keep on pretending that I'm fine, because survivor's guilt's pathetically convenient. Too much like my father to relent from the narcissistic self-flagellant. I pretend I'm a space woman's daughter. I project mission completion dates. I pretend I'm a space woman's daughter. It's all relative, so I'll just wait, wait, wait. I pretend I'm a space woman's daughter. I project mission completion dates. I pretend I'm a space woman's daughter. It's all relative, so I'll just wait, wait, wait. I pretend I'm a space woman's daughter. I'm fine. I project mission completion dates. Pretending that I'm fine. I'm a space woman's daughter. That I'm fine. It's all relative, so I'll just wait and wait.
Hey everybody, welcome to Big Blend Radio's first Friday Music Alert. That's it. That's a new show. Why not? It's New Music Friday. And that was from A Golden State. It's a single from the 5th album by Grover Anderson and the Lampoliers. The album is All the Lies That I Have Told You, and it's a collection of small town stories. And who doesn't love a good small town story? There's tons of them. When you go to small towns, go hang out in a bar, listen to local music, and you never know what you're going to overhear. But it's out today, out now. You can go to groveranderson.com, and we're super excited to have Grover back here on Big Blend Radio. How are you doing, Grover?
I'm doing really well. I'm excited. It's been a stressful week, and now the album's out, and I just get to spend like a day enjoying the release of it. Thank God.
Oh, that is cool. Yeah. Now, are you back out performing gigs?
Yeah. You know, I never stopped, and not because I was out, you know, playing bars or anything, but about, you know, I stopped for about a month, and then my wife realized that I was going insane at home, and we had just bought a pickup truck, and my wife had suggested, you know, why don't you go play concerts for people in their driveways? You can do private shows from a pickup truck. You can be safe. They can be safe. And so she kind of drafted this idea and suggested it to me. And so I went on my little Patreon and I said, hey, if anyone wants a private show at their house, let me know and I'll come out. And the first couple ones went so well that I opened it up to everybody. And I ended up spending pretty much all of the summer and spring, summer and fall of 2020, doing private shows for people where I would drive up, I'd back into their driveway, them and a couple neighbors that were, you know, distance would be in lawn chairs sitting there, and I'd play a show for them that was, you know, half an hour to an hour long. And then I'd just pack up and drive to the next one. You know, it was, you know, not a lot of people had stuff to do. So I could do weeknights, I could do weekends. And it ended up being one of the most rewarding musical experiences I've ever had, you know, in the face of all the tragedy that was around. It was a little candle that kind of shone a light for me and my music and stuff. And it was such a good experience around everything else that was so not good.
Right. And getting people to be happy, because that's one thing we all missed was live music. And there was this, I think we even talked at the beginning of the pandemic, that there was, you know, the live streaming shows that people were doing on Facebook, and which was great. I mean, thank God for that. But live music brings so much joy to people. And I think when you're socially distant, it's like, okay, a little bit of normal, you know?
Absolutely. So. Yeah, I did the live stream thing and I didn't hate it. But once I realized there was an opportunity to play live for people, it just changed everything about it. And I mean, I'm even doing a few of them still this year because the intimacy of that kind of thing, you know, I love playing house concerts. That's my favorite type of show to play. Yeah. But even that requires work from a host. It requires quite a bit of preparation and you know, low level advertising among your friend group. This is just roll up for you and some neighbors. And I was able to, you know, obviously keep costs down. I'm not setting up a PA or anything like that. And so it was great. It still is great. I did one 2 weeks ago around here, but yeah, the band is getting out more. That was the one downside, is that the band couldn't really participate in those at all. And so, you know, starting in April, May, we were able to get out and start doing band shows again. And that's been really nice, especially now, knowing.
You have to have a flatbed truck now. a big one.
Yeah, it all of a sudden becomes a much larger vehicle. It was weird, though, because, you know, we spent most of the year also working on this album remotely and recording our parts and emailing and chatting on the phone and stuff. And it was very weird. You know, we've been playing most of these songs before the shutdown, but it was weird to not be trying stuff out live. And, you know, here's a take. Ooh, I like that. Can you change it? It really changed the way we produced the album, which I realize it seems like a bit of a cliche in all like the artist interviews I've heard, because every album was done this way last year, but
it came out good. The production is top-notch quality. It really came out good. And I love the songs on it, as always. I mean, you're like an amazing songwriter and storyteller. And so, you know, this album, I love the whole point of like the small town stories. It's like everyone has a story. And I think in a small town, we get, you know, we used to live in the mountains. I think, you know, when we lived in San Diego, before we were traveling full time, and you know all about that. Yeah. But, you know, living up in the mountains, everyone knows each other's business and stories. And that's, you know, from the Golden State. I love that song too, because it kind of like, I don't know, it just takes me back to that, you know, feeling of knowing people's stories. And if you don't know their story, it gets made up for them.
Well, and absolutely. And there's a certain pressure, you know, on one hand, all the positives that come from living in a place like this, the help that people are willing to give to each other, the support that you get.
Yeah.
There's so much to be gained from being in a small community. And the kind of price that you pay for that is that, you know, everyone's in your business and everyone's in everyone else's business. And the idea that, you know, if you've got a life event, well, if you're going to go to the bar or you're going to go to a concert or something and see people that you know, there's a certain expectation that you're going to provide some level of information. You're going to be able to discuss and share. And, you know, from a Golden State situation of someone who's really not prepared for that and, you know, does not want that. And then another, like in Willie Nelson, the whole point of the song is this idea that, you know, if you're going through a divorce and you're going out and you're trying to be social, it's going to come up. Mm-hmm. And so what do you say? What do you prepare? How much information do you give? And, you know, in the characters in that song have this answer that they've worked on for, hey, how's it going? And yeah. it's very, you know, it's well-intentioned and it comes from like wanting to be the best, but it's also just filled with pain if you look right below it. And so this idea that just like anywhere you live, there's the trade-off. And mm-hmm. for me and my family, being in a place like this is worth it. But yeah. if you don't acknowledge the other parts, then, you know, you're kind of fooling yourself.
Well, yeah, you know, Willie Nelson, I love that song too. And it's a great duet. I'm glad it's a duet. And then you also, without it being a duet, I think, and it's a beautiful, just a beautiful duet. The singing is spot on. But it reminds me, I mean, I remember dating the bass player in our band. Don't do that. Don't do it. But when he sadly passed away, mm-hmm. and it was just one of those weird things in life. And it was really difficult being in music together to move and in love and to move beyond that, because every song, I mean, because, you know, as being in a band, yeah. you're always talking about every song you can all talk about and try out and, oh, this riff here and that, you know. So like music became like, oh God, I hate you right now, because everything was so painful. But then it became like my go-to, you know what I mean? It's that weird transition of pain. And, you know, that was death, but divorce is also like a death too, in a way. It's a big loss.
Yeah. It's, you know, I wrote that song a while ago, actually. And I wrote it with Kelly, who sings on it's voice and mine. She was at the time a lead singer for a local folk and bluegrass band. And I need her to sing on it. And we never made it work. We never were able to pin it down. And then of all things, she lives in Brooklyn last summer. But again, everyone had a lot of time. So I finally pinned her down, and she's very talented. She has an EP of her own out. And of course, Spotify, none of those things are actually linking the way that they should. But she performs under Kelly Jane, and she's great.
Speaking of Spotify, I know that you've done really well on Spotify and it's streaming and everything, but what's it like right now putting out an album and there's all these streaming services? And what I've heard is Bandcamp is the best, you know, for actually, you know, musicians getting paid, because it's not easy for musicians to get paid, and especially during lockdown without shows. And then I've heard through interviews that some stories bands did better doing live stream and actually made more money depending. So everyone's different. But for you right now, what's the best way to get the album? What's the best place?
You know, if you're a CD person, honestly, you know, email me, hey, I want your CD, Venmo me, I'll mail it to you. That kind of thing is I found that's the one great, you know, there's a couple, not great thing, a couple silver linings from the last year and a half. And one of them is that people are kind of getting used to Venmo and PayPal. I don't have a card reader at shows anymore. Cause I just say, hey, I just Venmo. Okay. But beyond there, you know, it's really where you're going to keep it in your rotation is the best place. You know, I mean, financially, yes, Bandcamp is just money right up front. It's great. Thank you. But you know, if you're a Pandora person and you like it on Spotify because you want to help me out, that actually doesn't do much. Like, go listen to it on Pandora. You know, so really whatever's keeping it in the rotation, because no one's going to get rich off of streaming on Spotify. But if you're playing your playlist when you and your friends are out on your boat and a friend hears the song that's in your playlist, you know, that's, I don't want to sound like a tech person, but like that kind of growth, that organic right. sharing, that's so much more important than the third of a cent we would get on Spotify. I personally use Spotify. The music, if you're Spotify, Apple Music, the money's better on Apple Music. But the layout for Spotify, you know, they've got their hooks in at this point, their interface is so, you know, I'm used to it.
Yeah. Yeah. But everyone's got their thing. It's the same as podcasting. We, you know, we're on Spotify too, and Pandora, iHeartRadio. It's like you're in every outlet you can be in. I think we are now in every outlet, and you know, it's just wherever people want to listen, go to your favorite place. That's what we say, even on our Instagram posts. It's like, go to your favorite place so that you know, enjoy it. So albums, you can get that when you go and do gigs and people can keep up with you at the shows and the band and get the albums there.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I've been really intrigued that people aren't really buying CDs anymore. The same, we're playing for new crowds, and it's the same shows, and people buy t-shirts, people want stickers, people want all the other stuff. Yeah. But and we made a vinyl album. We made a live album about a year ago. And so we bring that for band shows and people buy that. But, you know, my wife doesn't have a CD player in her car. And I know plenty of other people who don't also. And so I think, I forget who I was talking to the other day, but someone mentioned, I think people are just buying CDs to be nice, which is kind of cracks me up. But I'm starting to notice that myself. You know, honestly, where you're going to listen to it, where your friends are going to overhear it with you, that I've realized is probably more important at this point than, you know, can stream on Spotify. But please stream on Spotify too.
Yeah, you listen wherever you can. So the Lampeliers. Okay, so Lampeliers. I remember Nancy and I first met you on the beginning of our Love Your Parks tour across the country. I've got Yosemite behind me just in honor of that.
Gorgeous.
Because that's where we met you, in Sonora, California, downtown. Yeah. It was, they do that Saturday art night where you stroll the galleries and you were playing live music, which was awesome. And we're like, oh, you got to come on a show. And what, now you're married? Is it two kids now? And everything. I mean, come on, a lot of change. Has it changed you in songwriting? Having children and going through, you know, a relationship that's a marriage. Has that changed you?
I'd be foolish to say no. It absolutely has. Although sometimes it's weird how that comes out. I think Willie Nelson was the first song I wrote after getting married. It's a song about splitting up, which is, you know, there's not a lot of intentionality. It's just, you know, I write my life. And what's interesting is that the frontman, the last album that it came out with, was very intentionally autobiographical.
Right.
And so the love songs, you could probably guess who they were about. The breakup songs were kind of based in fear and anxiety and what I see around me and saying, boy, I want to make sure I identify what's going on there and keep it at bay. This album, for the most part, is a lot more, you know, removed from myself. There's certainly kernels of truth in every song. The Icarus, you know, the last song on the album is a song about my family and a tragedy that happened to a relative and watching my dad's family kind of come together. And the whole point of the song is, you know, even through really, really tough stuff, together we can get through it. Mm-hmm. And it kind of struck a pretty good chord for me last year with this idea, hey, we're all in this together. But it's not a song about me. Yeah. So the only really truly autobiographical song of that album on this album is Backseat Chorus, which is very explicitly about my experiences in a car with my wife and kids.
Ah, you know, Backseat Chorus, and then we're going to close with that too. I love that song too. It's upbeat, it's fun. But you just went through Alaska. I mean, you guys, and you know, I think when we met you had just been on the road for like quite a few months traveling. Like,
it sounds,
you know, like
right.
We're all nomadic in a way, but it seems like this past summer, well, we're still in summer, right?
we're in summer.
Yeah, it's hot. But that you've been doing, you know, the travel bug has not left you, or the nature, being out in nature.
This summer was weird because we had a couple of trips planned last summer, and I had a couple of tours planned last summer that you know, all got shut down. And so this was kind of makeup. And so we went and visited, I have family in Alaska, and went up to Fairbanks, and we visited Denali. And then we came back, and then we went, you know, my wife hadn't seen her dad in almost 2 years. And he hadn't met his 6-month-old granddaughter, you know. So we flew out and kind of made a commitment to Katie that no shows when we're with your family this year. Because normally it's a 2 to 3 week trip. And I, you know, a week of that, I'm just driving somewhere playing music. But this year, we're going to be all together. And so that went really well. And then they stayed an extra week. I came back home. They extended their trip. And then I came back home because I had shows booked. So I've been here for a week. It's the weirdest. That's not seeing my kids for a week is insane. I don't know how people do it. But so I've been here playing shows and kind of getting ready for the album release and stuff. So.
Oh, right on. But yeah, going out, you know, something as people know, Nancy and I pet sit. So everyone, if you hear dogs yipping, they're called Shih Tzus in the background. And I've been walking around the house going Shih Tzu, Shih Tzu, because I can get away with it. But they deserve their little name. They're cute. They're very cute. But as we travel, like, you know, right now we've actually, you know, we're like helping people be able to go out and have peace of mind with their pets and home and everything. And we've had so many unique experiences, but one of the ones we're gathering is people getting out to being able to see their family, and they haven't seen their parents, and maybe parents are ailing or in a nursing home that they even weren't allowed to get to. So they haven't seen their close family for over 2 years, depending. One lady we just sat for, it's been 2 years since her mom and sister, and a hurricane on top of that got in the way. So it's been a rough 2 years, whether it's wildfires, hurricanes. We went through three last year. Just traveling, and it's nice to see people be able to get back out. And I think, you know, this whole COVID thing kind of made us go back to what's important in life, you know. And I think that's something that your music has always had, that, you know, those moments, those small moments that really are quite bigger than what we think while we're in a small moment. Does that make any sense?
No, it absolutely does. It's funny. I've been listening to a country music podcast that was kind of focused on like 90s music and stuff. And it was interviewing people from that era. And one of the things that the host kind of really honed in on was this idea that what made country music really, you know, pre-2000 so special was that it was adult music. It was music that dealt with adult themes, and it wasn't marketing to kids and, you know, just go party. It was, there were songs about divorce, songs about drinking, songs about loss and all this kind of stuff. Not that that exists in all types of music, but that was really a defining feature of country music. Mm-hmm. And I've always kind of been frustrated about trying to define or label what genre of music I make, because I very intentionally make my albums kind of a little all over the place musically and stuff. But hearing that really helped me kind of settle into this idea that, no, I make country music. You know, sometimes it might have rock or pop sounds around it, which is, you know, very normal for that kind of music nowadays. But the stories I try and tell and the ideas I try and focus on are adult stories and their life. And you know, it's really helped me to feel more comfortable as settling into, well, this is the genre of music that I make.
I don't like boxing it in, because I just like the songs and the stories, because musically you're good and you're a really good lyricist. And I know you're also an English teacher, right? So what, you live in Murphy, California. So you've got the small town living going on. So being a school teacher, that's got to be a whole other level of small town living, because those kids know you. And it's like, I mean, that's a whole other level.
There's a couple different steps there, because there's one, which is, when I have new students, oh, my parents really like you. And I'm like, oh, cool. So I'm not cool to you. Okay, that's fine. And then there's every once in a while kids who like really, who go to shows and so that's always really awkward. But then the tough one is I have, you know, I keep my social media public.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to promote music. And I'll, you know, throw a picture of my family on there every once in a while and that kind of stuff. But that's a big no-no as a teacher, you know, to have, you know, you keep everything locked down. And so learning to navigate that side of it, which, you know, it's not that hard to do. You just don't post anything you wouldn't want seen anyway.
Right.
But the idea of running that very delicate balance, and, you know, there's a song on the last album that starts, I have wasps in the woodpile and I don't like my work. And every time a kid's at the show, I know I'm going to get it the next time I see them at school. Like, well, excuse me, Mr. Anderson, you know, but it is, you know, you could look at it as something scary or a teaching opportunity. You know, when kids do ask about, you know, how balancing that or lyrics versus, you know, I'm an English teacher, I can talk about, well, yeah, you take real life experiences, then you extrapolate them into a narrative, or you take, you know, into a theme or something like that. You know, it's the corniest thing, but it's a teaching opportunity, you know?
That's cool. No, that's cool. I think, you know, teaching in a small town is fun in a way, because it's like you kind of watch the kids grow. And I think we're all after COVID, and I want to ask you about that. How was that for your students during COVID? Because that's a whole other thing, like trying to get kids having the internet and that connection, where I think when you grow up in a small town, and if you're in a good school in the small town, then you have a better connection than sometimes kids fall through the cracks in the cities. I think the really giant schools with giant amount of kids in a classroom can get left behind, really. So, well, yeah.
I, I wish it was only isolated to one place, but we certainly experienced that too, you know, probably for different reasons than in a city. But, you know, I'm very fortunate that this conversation is happening because my internet is based on a tiny little satellite dish that requires line of sight to the top of the hill. And there are plenty of people who live in towns who have wired Comcast. And if they don't have internet, they put out some hotspots around town, but there are for every, you know, every three kids like that, there's at least one who lives somewhere out in the boonies, somewhere who's struggling. And there are plenty of kids that, you know, failed the first quarter. And when you ask why, well, I don't have internet. I could barely get on. I was using, you know, a hotspot that didn't really work and sharing it with my two sisters. So the divide between, you know, access was just shown, or the light on it was shown so much brighter. And it really was, you know, kids, there's plenty of kids who, you know, maybe not necessarily have special needs or anything like that, but need that, you know, hey, how's it going? You know, and there's so many students that, you know, just, it's just the tap on the shoulder or the, a little bit of individualized attention that, that helps them get over that hump. And you can't do that online. It just doesn't work. And so it was a real struggle. The kids who had all the technology and all the connectivity and who were also already good students, I don't think they suffered at all, other than the social emotional side. But, you know, academically they were just fine. But when you get to a kid who, you know, it's not low level kids, it's not bad kids, it's just kids who might need a little extra push. They didn't have that for a while. And it was really tough to see that, especially we're fortunate, you know, we're a small community and our district did everything pretty safely and followed the rules pretty well. And we were able to get back to hybrid last, you know, 50-50 last, I believe, October. And we did most of the year like that. And so we had half the kids on campus every other day. You know, it was weird scheduling, but and even that, you could see the days that the kids were there, just how much it brightened up for them. So it's going to be interesting. I told all the kids, you know, hey, when we get back on campus, you're going to have to introduce yourself to me because, you know, I don't know what you look like without your masks on and stuff. It was pretty.
You know, but being a teacher, has that helped you also in regards to, and has music helped you teach, you know, being a performer and vice versa, because it's kind of connected, you know, getting your, you know, an audience to listen to new music. You know, I'm one of those, there's new music. I'm ready to eat. You know, it's like a new menu. It's like chocolate, you know, yay. And then, you know, for new music, you know, people get stuck. I remember doing a gig and somebody's like, we're not tipping you unless you play Mustang Sally. I'm like, please, it's a warm-up song. It's like Freebird, you know, stop it. You know, they want the same song over and over. And it's like, that's a warm-up sound check song. That's not, I know it's a real song. I remember doing it and people were lining up for food while we're doing a sound check and they started doing a conga line to Mustang Sally. I'm like, no. But anyway, getting out new music, especially originals, can be tough. So you've got to have that connectivity with the audience, just like with teaching. So that's kind of hand in hand with what you do, right? Is getting that connectivity.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny when you go chicken and the egg. For me, you know, I would sing. I wouldn't play music. I would sing a lot. And then, you know, I joined theater and then I did theater for a while. Then I played music and then I became a teacher. And so I don't know where I started working on that, but I know there was a long, long time where I was not particularly good at working an audience or working a crowd or feeling confident with the things that I was saying. And, I certainly, you know, you could probably draw a line to where that's where I really started to grow into that and feel more confident with about the time I started teaching, because that idea of one, projecting confidence and you know, I know what I'm saying and you can trust me, you can believe these things that I'm saying, while also striking that, you know, not being a know-it-all, not being overconfident, not turning people off with your projected expertise or something like that. And so trying to find that sweet spot. It's funny. We were talking the other day after a show about, you know, the other guys in the band and like bantering with the crowd and all this kind of stuff. And three of us in the band are teachers and one of us is not. Yeah. And the guy who's not is by far and away the funniest person in the band, and he provides the most kind of edgy and fun banter. But with that comes, like, we realize, like, oh, you don't really have that experience of towing the line in the moment. And so we kind of need to teach you that more. Not that he did anything inappropriate or anything like that, but just this idea of, yeah, this is kind of a skill that the three of us have worked on that you haven't had an opportunity to. And so it was funny to see it more in somebody else and kind of get some perspective on what that looks like.
I had a teacher do that to me recently on Facebook. He's a retired earth science. Yes, Jim Ostick, my friend Jim. We are in these Facebook groups about walking and hiking and all kinds of stuff. And I don't know, I made some comment back and he's like, Lisa, !! That's it. That's all he had to do. And I'm like, oh, teacher. It wasn't that bad, but it was that toe the line thing. That's interesting that you say that.
I'm struggling right now because I felt really good about where we were on stage and the way we could, you know, talk with the crowd going into, you know, March, February, 2020. And then it was relearning, hey, how do I do this to a camera? How do I do this to people who are chatting on the live stream? And then from there, when I started doing the pickup truck shows, then it was just my sweet spot because it was essentially a conversation. It was more of a house concert setup, right, where it was such a small group. I could really have, you know, a brief chat. If it was time to just a quick joke, boom, you know, I realized, like, oh, I can do this well, and I can feel confident, and I can put on a show that doesn't feel like a show. But what was interesting is now coming back to the band shows is my crowd work and stuff. I feel like I haven't been skiing in 10 years, and I'm trying to do it again because I can do it. But it's, my legs are sore. I'm awkward. I'm falling over more than I'd like. And so it's been tricky, and it's learning again. And also I gotta have new material, you know, over, you know, you don't want to introduce the same song every time the exact same way for
No Mustang Sally.
No. workshop, you know, it's silly, but like you play small gigs and you kind of try out new introductions, try out new stories about a song, and not having that, you know, we jump straight into high stakes shows. You know, we played a sold out show in May, after starting to gig again in April. And so it was being on stage, just like, all right, here we go. Like, let me try some crowd work stuff. And, you know, it was hit or miss.
But isn't it also because as a band, the Lampeliers, you guys, you know, have a communication where you just look at each other without even having to say much. Like, a band really has this other language, you know, to be able to put on a show without saying, oh, like, what song should we do next? You have to already know and kind of look at each other like, okay, let's, you know, end this now or whatever. It's going to change every time you're on stage, no matter how much you practice and do. It's always this fluid thing when you're live. It's not just the crowd's language, but it's kind of getting back into communication with each other.
Absolutely. And it was funny because there was a lot of times, you know, when we were working on these songs for this album, that we would say, like, oh, wouldn't it be cool live if we did this, or when, you know, when we perform it. Now it's like, oh, let's remember that one text that we sent, you know.
Yeah, where, let's go through the history. Oh, that's fun. But, you know, I think this album, I love the album. I can't wait. We're going to be listening to it as we drive across Texas again. So, hey, listen, you need good music for Texas. And I'm not knocking the state. It's beautiful, but it's a long drive. And if it's raining again, you need music that just kind of helps you through the whole thing. I can't wait to listen to it. One of my favorites, which I wasn't familiar with this song, and now it's like one of my favorites, is The Gardener on there.
Oh, yeah. So that's a cover, actually. Yeah. That's one of the few ones that we didn't write. And, you know, there were a couple artists that, like, you know, it was weird. A lot of people were saying, like, oh, I'm going back to the classics to kind of get me through the last year. And for me, I fell into a couple artists that just for whatever reason made me feel really comfortable. And one of them was The Tallest Man on Earth. Something about like the warmth of his songwriting or something. And so that was one of the very small rotation of covers that the band does. We try not to do a lot of covers, but that one, we just really like playing it. I just really like playing it. I think it's really fun. And so, yeah, we said, well, screw it. Let's go for it. Let's try and actually record a full band cover, something we'd never really done before, and see how it goes. And it sounds completely different from the original. I don't know if you've heard the original, but it's him with an acoustic guitar. And this is, you know, honky tonk organs and keyboards and all this kind of stuff. We went for, I was like, yeah, this is kind of our wagon wheel meets like Highway 61.
It's awesome. I love it. And so, you know, the whole album being out now, it's exciting. It's out. Everyone can get it. Right. And the Lampeliers, you guys are out and playing again. Before you go, give everyone a shout out in the Lampelier band. Tell everybody who the Lampeliers are. And do you take your own street lamp with you? Two shows.
We should work on our stage set. That would be fun. So the Lampeliers are the oldest members, Josh Serto. He plays drums, and he's kind of our live show director. He really is more than anyone giving us ideas. And, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we tried this? That's Josh on drums. We have Anthony Delaney plays bass. He's been in the band. He's the newest member of the Lampeliers. He joined, I think, 3 years ago. Sounds about right. And he had just moved to Murphy's from the Bay Area. And he came to a show, and we didn't have a bass player at the time. We're like, oh my God, what, you know, it just worked out perfectly. And then the third member is Marshall Henry. Marshall is the youngest member of the band. He's just turned 30. You know, he's about to turn 30. Yeah. So jealous.
Yeah, me too.
Immensely talented musician. He plays lead guitar. He also plays a lot of keyboards and stuff. And he plays violin on one song just for kicks because he's that good. And he really, more than anyone, helped kind of co-produce this album with me, where the idea of I could communicate, hey, this is the direction I want for this song. And all of a sudden he would just sonically lay out the whole kind of breadth of the track, and then we'd fill it in from there. Awesome. And he has the co-produced credit on this one.
It really sounds good. The album, just the quality of the sound, you know, and then of course all the songs and the stories. I love it. I'm excited for everyone to hear it, and it's out now, everyone. So, you know, groveranderson.com is the website, right? That's the best place for everyone to go get it.
Yeah. If you want to learn the words, or you want to find out where you see all the links, go to groveranderson.com and it'll all be right there.
Yeah. And keep up also on YouTube. You've got shows on there, the videos. It's still for the Golden State. That's classic. That's a classic lyric video for sure.
Okay. You know, I was,
that was good.
Every once in a while I come up with something. I'm like, okay, I'm not embarrassed to share this. Okay, good.
Oh, no. That I thought that was really good. But we're going to close with Backseat Chorus. And I think that's really cool right now. It's summertime, and a lot of people are going to have Backseat Chorus going on as they drive across the country. Road trips are back in, thank God. You know, you got to have them.
It's probably my, you know, it's by far the happiest song on the new album. It's just, you know, and I have a Backseat Chorus now. I get to sing along to all the songs with my little girl in the back seat, and it's really fun. So
that's awesome. We want to thank the National Parks Arts Foundation for sponsoring today's show. You guys check them out at nationalparksartsfoundation.org. They are awesome. Artists, musicians, filmmakers, poets, writers, you name it. Ceramic artists can apply any genre that you do, any medium, to apply to stay in a national park for a full month and create art or music or stories. It's amazing, from Hawaii Volcanoes National Park to Death Valley, which I think had made the record of like 136 degrees or something this year. Yeah, this one's in February, and it's for night sky photography. So I'm just saying. Then there's Dry Tortugas off in an island for you know, a month on your own off the grid island. Chaco Canyon up in northern New Mexico. So it's really cool. And also, if you're a philanthropist, if you want to donate money, go check them out. NationalParksArtsFoundation.org. And of course, keep up with us at BigBlendRadio.com. Here it is, Backseat Chorus. Thank you so much, Grover. It's always a pleasure.
It's been a real treat. I really appreciate it. Forgot about the time we saw Faithful, and we laughed about the sign that showed a person burning up. What I'd give to take another drive across Montana, sing my songs for real cowboys selling CDs from the trunk. We've got fewer options now, there's so much more to do. Back then all we needed was time enough to make a life worth living.
Let distractions stay distractions. Temptation can be taxing. Don't you give it all your time. Go swimming in the lakes and in the rivers, with lovers, friends, and sinners, in sunlight and moonshine. Live in the city. You don't have to stay forever, but you'll learn and you'll live better knowing how to share your space. And if nothing else will help, walking in the woods goes a long way. Seven miles from town to home means 7 miles for singing. And that's at least four songs if I can keep trucking third. Listening to the chorus in the backseat gives me shivers. May our spirits stay freewheeling as our grasp upon the words in a life worth living. Let distractions stay distractions. Temptation can be taxing. Don't you give it all your time. Go swimming in the lakes and in the rivers, with lovers, friends, and sinners, in sunlight and moonshine. Live in the city. You don't have to stay forever, but you'll learn and you'll live better knowing how to share your space. And if nothing else will help, walking in the woods goes a long way. Try to keep your mistakes inconsequential. Let your heart be broken once or twice. Don't ignore your regrets, but don't weep at lost potential. And if you let somebody share your life, make a life worth living. Let distractions stay distractions. Temptation can be taxing. Don't you give it all your time. Go swimming in the lakes and in the rivers, with lovers, friends, and sinners in sunlight.